Hello and welcome to the Butterfly Evolution Show. Thank you all for tuning in tonight. Again, we are studying or talking about the Willie Lynch letter or speech that was presented back in 1712. And so again, I just want to move forward quickly so that we don't run out of time. I want to thank everyone again for tuning in tonight. Before we begin, I just want to remind you that the chat line is open and remind you that if you're listening by chat that you have to submit and want to submit your question or comment by way of chat, then all you have to do is just submit that, but you do have to be a registered follower of the show. If you are not, then just feel free to just call in using the number, the 818-691-7406. Again, 818-691-7406, and just press the number 1 at any time during the discussion. And I will pull you in by identifying your area code. And from there, I will give the last 4 digits of your phone number. So just keep that in mind as we move forward. And you don't have to wait until I ask for a question or comments, although you may have to wait just a little bit for me to finish up on the discussion or presenting the topic. Tonight, we're going to talk about the breaking process of the African woman and the Negro marriage. And we were going to have one more discussion after that, but in studying and researching for the topic, we're just going to include all of the remaining sections, and then next week will just be a conclusion of this topic. I just found that it's more beneficial to include the last 2 sections of the letter as well, because they tie into what we're talking about tonight, the breaking process of the African woman and then the Negro marriage. The next part of it is that we're adding is possible interloping negatives and controlled language. And that may sound a little off, but like again, in studying for this topic, it is very crucial and important, I think, to add those two because they tie into the breaking of the African woman and the Negro marriage. I want to just go back a little bit because we do have some people that are on for the first time and who have not or did not listen to the last two or three sessions that we've had. So I just kind of want to go back and reiterate. Again, we're talking about the making of a slave, and this was a speech presented in 1712 by a slave owner, Willie Lynch, and he presented this letter or this speech to other slave owners. And we've covered a number of things and as we've gone through these topics, but as we move forward, we've asked you to think about progression or regression. Where are we? Where are we now? Where are we going? And again, what do you think Dr. Martin Luther King would say if he was asked that question about progression or regression? Where are we now? And basically, progression is basically movement, advancement, or evolution. Regression is kind of the opposite. Relapse or worsening, you know, are we there? And just for the sake of telling you again, we went over this in the first show, the definition of slave is basically a person held in servitude. And servitude is basically in bondage, for a different word of explaining the servitude. And Lynch predicted some important factors that I want to go back over. He predicted that if his plan was implemented, that it will become self-generating for 300 years, maybe longer. But 2012 marks the 300th year since he has made this speech and implemented his plan, so to speak. So we're in the 300th year, 2012. So it's very important, I think, to discuss this topic because we're here in the 300th year and ask, do you feel that it's been or it has become a self-generating plan in this day and time, looking back as a race where we were, where we, in my age group, you know, where we come from. As I look at the new generation and even now some of the older generation, I really find myself puzzled sometimes trying to figure it all out or make some sense of it. But this being the 300th year, think about our crime rate for our African-American men, young men as well, women as well. We have a lot of young women who are incarcerated as well. The number of teenage pregnancies, the number of one-parent homes. I think the focus on the need to have things to make one feel better rather than dealing with the inner self. So just think about all those things as we move forward. And, again, keep your mind on progression or regression. I want to iterate one more thing, and that's Frederick Douglass's statement that although he was enslaved, he never allowed his mind to become enslaved. Again, I think that's important because if Frederick Douglass can come through, or anyone that came up during the time of slavery, if they can make a decision to say, I'm here, my state of mind is here, you know, but they're not going to take my mind. He knows where he is. He's in slavery. His parents are of slavery as well, but he decided that my mind belongs to me, and nothing they do, nothing they say can take that away. So that's important. Teach that to your kids. Don't allow them to take their circumstances and make it their life. So without further ado, and again, there were some other things that we went over. I challenge you if you are. We do have a lot of first-time callers. I see you out there tonight. Thank you. But just for the sake of time, we don't have a whole lot of time to go back and review everything that we talked about over the last two or three sessions. But keep those things in mind. Again, progression or regression, Frederick Douglass's statement. I'll go back over that again. And then we talked about some differences that the slave owners created, so to speak, to create some fear between the slaves and to separate them, so to speak, female versus male, light skin versus dark skin. We talked about fine hair versus good hair, the size of plantation, I think the status of plantation, and then I think even as your role on the plantation, you know, your job on the plantation, were you in the house, were you in the field? And so these things were all joined together to create separation among the slaves. And in that, they added fear and other things. So, again, as we go through and talk about, especially with tonight's topic, think about those things. And as much as I try not to have to read the majority of this, I found myself highlighting a good portion of it and pulling a good portion out of it. So I'm going to read the majority of the breaking process of the African woman, and then I'm going to come back and only discuss the things that I've highlighted. But as I go through it, if you want to jot something down that stands out to you, please do so, because it's difficult to pull out pieces of it because I want you to get the entire story and the entire feel about the breaking process of the African woman. And the reason being is because I am an African woman, and as I look around my friends, the young girls, and sometimes, especially with our young girls, I feel like, where do they go from here? What's next? Because they've experienced everything, seemingly, to me. They know everything. They're allowed to do everything. There are no boundaries. I think there's too much freedom for some of the young girls. And so where do they go from here? And how have we as parents, as grandparents, how have we allowed them to get here? So there's a couple of things in here that are very, very important. And as I read through them and reread them, I thought, wow, what revelation it seemed that Lynch had at this time. So I'm going to start, and again, I'll read very slowly because, again, I want you to get the full message from this. And this part is the breaking process of the African woman. And it goes, take the female and run a series of tests on her to see if she will submit to your desires willingly. Test her in every way because she is the most important factor for good economics. If she shows any sign of resistance in submitting completely to your will, do not hesitate to use the bullwhip on her to extract the last bit of the B word out of her. And I'll just say that because I don't know if we have kids listening. But this was done even to women, you know, as far as taking the bullwhip out. Take care not to kill her, for in doing so, you spoil good economics. When in complete submission, she will train her offsprings in the early years to submit to labor when they become of age. Understanding is the best thing. Therefore, we shall go deeper into this area of subject matter concerning what we have produced here in this breaking process of the female nigger. We have reversed the relationship. In her natural, uncivilized state, she would have a strong dependency on the uncivilized nigger male. And I want to repeat that. We have reversed the relationship. In her natural, uncivilized state, she would have a strong dependency on the uncivilized nigger male, and she would have a limited protective tendency toward her independent male offspring, and would raise male offsprings to be dependent like her. I'm going to stop there for just a second because I want to make sure you all heard that part, the very last part, that she would have a protective tendency, or she would have limited protective tendency toward her independent male offspring and would raise the male offspring to be dependent like her. Basically, it's saying that mothers will raise their males to be dependent like her. And we all know that's really out of order. Nature, and the letter goes on, nature had provided for this type of balance. We reversed nature by burning and pulling a civilized nigger apart and bullwhipping the other to the point of death, all in her presence. And this is all in the female, in the presence of the female, the African woman. By her being left alone, unprotected, with the male image destroyed, the ordeal caused her to move from her psychological dependent state to a frozen, independent state. In this frozen psychological state of independence, she will raise her male and female offspring in reversed roles. And again, pay close attention to that. The African American will raise her female and male offsprings in reversed roles. For fear of the young male's life, she will psychologically train him to be mentally weak and dependent and physically strong. Because she has become psychologically independent, she will train her female offsprings to be psychologically independent. And again, this is the female. This is basically switching the roles. What have you got? You got the nigger woman woman out front and the nigger man behind and scared. And I'll say that again. They're asking, what have you got? And they're asking each other. You've got the nigger woman out front and the nigger man behind and scared. This is a perfect situation of sound, sleep, and economics. Before the breaking process, we had to be alert, on guard at all times. Now we can sleep soundly, for out of frozen fear, his woman stands guard for us. He cannot get past his early slave molding process. He is a good tool, now ready to be tied to the horse at a tender age. And we explained early on about the slaves being compared to livestock and then being compared to the breaking of a horse. By this time, a nigger boy reaches the age of 16. He is soundly broken in and ready for a long life of sound and efficient work and the reproduction of a unit of good labor force. Continually through the breaking of the uncivilized savage niggers by throwing the nigger female savage into a frozen psychological state of independence by killing the protective male image, and by creating a submissive, dependent mind of the nigger male slave, we have created an abiding cycle that turns on its own axis forever. Unless the phenomenon occurs and reshifts the position of the male and female slaves, we show that we mean by example. Take the case of the two economic slave units and examine them close. And from here, it goes into the Negro marriage. But I want to stop there and pull out a few things on the African-American woman. And again, as we talk about this, think about The state of women now and the state of many women being out front, not being totally submissive to men and not really feeling like they have to or want to be dependent on a male. And I'm not saying that they should be, but I do think that the role that we all have taken is a bit out of order as far as how the makeup of the family should be, the male being the head of the household, and so to speak. We have a number of one-parent homes. We have a number of our, again, young males that are being locked up. And the interesting part about this was this part that says that women basically will be more attracted to the uncivilized nigger male. And what they're saying is something that they did would make the woman want the uncivilized male. And me personally, I think that is a lot. There's a lot of that going on where young girls and women as well, they are basically taking care of men. They have no morals and values in picking men. It's almost like, and when I read this, I'm like, wow, because I think so often women will allow men to come in and lay up, don't work. They take care of them, and just to an extent, almost to unbelief. So as I talk about that, I want to open up the lines for women, I hope, to get in on this, and men as well. But I'd like to hear women, the woman's point of view on this particular section, basing it upon your life, what you see in our young girls, where you've come from, because, again, I've not always been where I am now and still have a lot of growing to do. But as I look at, again, our young girls today and some of our grown women, how they are just settling for so little even in their own lives. And I think that adds to the situation even a bit more, because the more unstable and emotional you are, the less you're going to pick well, the more you're going to be drawn, again, to that uncivilized male, and that just doubles the chances of you picking one and things not working out the way that it should be. So, again, the lines are open, and I'd like to hear from some of the women about this particular section before we go on into the Negro marriage, because that just takes it to another level, because now you have the female selecting the uncivilized male, going into possibly marriage or, you know, live-in, going into being parents of this child, a child or children in most states, and raising a family, whether it's if they stay together or separate. And then think about how that plays into our males and females. I read an article that there will be 400,000 males released from prison with nowhere to go in the next 2 years. And that is alarming. That is just alarming. And again, not all males that are locked up, you know, should be there. But we have a great number of our males incarceration now. So where are we again on that? And I'd again like to hear from the women. If not, I'm just going to keep going and we'll sum it up as I go through. After I complete the Negro marriage, we can go back and sum it up as far as how this all ties into it. The Negro marriage part is a bit shorter, but again, it just ties it all together. The Negro marriage says that we breed two nigger males. We have a caller, so I don't want to go into that until we finish. Okay, caller, I think we have Ms. Arlene on the phone with us.
Yeah, hi, Tammy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I wanted to say that in terms of the reverse relationship, and maybe it didn't get started, it certainly started back with the plantation system and all that, but what kind of made it reemphasized, if you will, is the period of time when the corporate America, when the hiring would you would solve two problems with hiring the woman and being able to, you've gotten a black being hired as well as a woman being hired, when you hit all the problems with whether you hire a woman or hire a man or whether you hire the black American as opposed to the white Americans and balancing that all out. And many times what happened, I remember very quickly on Good Times, where his wife was hired before he was hired, because in that way he would be hiring a black as well as hiring a woman. And with that, many times men were placed in corporate America in the background, well, not necessarily corporate America, just in the hiring market, because you were able to either hire the woman and also hire the black. So what happened many times, the woman became, this is just one instance, became the head of the household. And the head of the household, not with this role reversal, because it was a need for that, because she had the job. Many times she was hired before the black man was hired for that reason. They were able to kill two birds with one stone, if I'm not being confusing. And I think that has played a part also in the reversal of roles, wherein the man has, I think, have taken the back seat in many instances in corporate America, and in many instances in just the job market.
Right. I can understand what you're saying, basically, with them killing kind of two birds with one stone by allowing this process had already taken place, but now taking it further, if we bring that female in prior to the male, and so much of that has been done, I truly agree with you. But they are, in a sense, or society is, in a sense, killing two birds with one stone, because they're taking it a bit further by allowing that woman, number one, to, she now financially makes more than the woman. She's already at a state when she goes into this position. In most cases, they're already in a state of feeling superior, so to speak, because most men want to be able to take care of their family.
Absolutely.
I think for the most part, most men would love to be able to take care of their family's needs totally. But when their back is against the wall, when they're searching for the jobs, when they're doing all that they can to get them, now for society to say, no, well, we're going to bring your wife in, and now your wife is the breadwinner, so to speak. And psychologically, with all that they have been put through, the male, I think when this creeps in, now my wife has the job, she's feeding the family, so to speak, I think that does
right.
destroy someone, or can mentally destroy a male.
Well, you are intensifying the reversal of the roles. And I know this happened with the establishment of the plantation system and all that, but as it grew, segregation grew, as there was more of a need for it when integration began, and the companies were being forced to hire more black Americans, and then you also had the women's movement coming in here, was saying also you make sure you hire women. So you've got two problems here. How do you deal with it if you're in corporate America? Well, hire the black woman, and you're hiring a black, and you're also hiring a woman. That was
right.
a significant thing in actually pushing the role reversal.
Right. I got a glimpse of researching the topic of, and I didn't have a lot of time to go into depth in it, but about African women at that time going into the military. And
mm-hmm.
that was something that I don't remember studying, having a lot of studies on, you know, in school, but I'm going to go back and read the articles that I found on that. And it talked about, you know, it really didn't remove them from slavery, although they thought that it would put them in a different state, so to speak, state of being or state of living. It really did not. It just put them there, you know, in the military process, but they remained slaves. So
right.
I found that really, really interesting, and I'm going to go back and research that. And as we go through, our challenge all of you to start researching this topic. And it's so much out there. It's like when you pull up one thing, you get 10 more that ties it all together, or that makes you want to continue to search. But just, you know, just continue to look. And if you have not pulled this letter up, please do so. Ms. Erlene, did you have anything else?
That's all, Tammy. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to take you out of queue, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to check the chat line here just a second and just make sure we don't have anyone out that has put something out there. Okay. Okay, the lines are open, but I'm going to move forward, and this is with the Negro marriage. It goes, we breed two nigger males with two nigger females. Then we take the nigger male away from them and keep them moving and working. That goes back to what Ms. Earlene came in and shared with us. So it says here, then we take the nigger male away from them and keep them moving and working. Say one nigger female bears a nigger, one nigger female bears a nigger female baby and the other bears a nigger male baby. Both nigger females being without influence of the nigger male image, frozen with a independent psychologically state, will raise their offspring into reverse positions. The one with the female offspring will teach her to be like herself, independent and negotiable. We negotiate with her, through her, by her, negotiates her and her will. The one with the nigger male offspring, she being frozen, subconscious fear for his life, will raise him to be mentally dependent and weak, but physically strong. In other words, body over mind. Now, in a few years, when these two offsprings become fertile for early reproduction, we will mate and breed them and continue the cycle. That is good, sound, and long-range comprehensive planning. That's all it has to say about the Negro marriage. Basically, I think that's, that part's so short because they pretty much have so much confidence in the plan that they have set forth, which is to put the woman in a state of fear, so to speak, put her in front of the male after she's seen the male be broken. She has a fear for her young son and raises her young son to be dependent, so to speak. So here again, the Negro marriage, they have a little to say because, again, I think that they are really confident in the process that they set forth with the African-American woman. Now, that brings us to possible interloping negatives. And I'm not going to read all of that section. There's just a piece of it here that I found interesting, but I challenge you to go back and read it. It goes, crossbreeding a horse means taking a horse and breeding it with an ass, and you get a dumb, backward ass, long-headed mule that is not reproductive nor productive by itself. Crossbreeding niggers mean taking so many drops of good white blood and putting them into as many nigger women as possible. So again, when I heard that, I thought about the number of slave owners, the male slave owners that would have relation with our African-American women, slaves. So I'm going to read that part again. Crossbreeding niggers mean taking so many drops of good white blood and putting them into as many nigger women as possible, varying the drops by the various tone that you want, and then letting them breed with each other until another cycle of color appears as you desire. What this means is this. Put the niggers and the horse in a breeding pot, mix some asses and some good white blood, and what do you get? You got a multiplicity of colors and ass backwards, unusual niggers running tied to the backward ass long-heeled mules, the one productive of itself, the other sterile. The one constant, the other dying, we keep the nigger constant, for we may replace the mules for another tool, both mule and nigger tied to each other, neither knowing whether the other came from and neither productive for itself nor without each other. That part was absolutely just intriguing to me to hear about the, again, it explains to me or has some depth in explaining the process of women being raped even at that time. It's they had production on their mind, and I'm sure other things as well, but it does make some sense or bring some understanding as to possibly why
the slave owners were sleeping, raping women at that time. So that part was very interesting. Again, that is in the possible interloping negatives. The third part to this is the control language. Crossbreeding completed, basically. And so this completes all of the things that they have put together here. And it says crossbreeding completed for further severance for their original being beginning. We must completely annihilate the mother tongue, okay, so the tongue of the mother, of both the nigger, the new nigger, and the new mule, and institute a new language that involves the new life's work of both. You know, language is a peculiar institution. It leads to the heart of people. The more a foreigner knows about the language of another country, the more he's able to move through all levels of that society. Therefore, if the foreigner is an enemy of the country, to that extent that he knows the body of the language, to that extent is the country vulnerable to attack or invasion by the foreigner. For example, if you take a slave, if you teach him all about your language, he will know all your secrets, and he is then no more a slave for you, for you can't fool him any longer. And being a fool is one of the basic ingredients of any incidents to the maintenance of the slavery system. So here we go again. I want to sum it up, but I want, again, I'm going to open the chat line up, and I do see that we have a question and a comment out on the chat line, and I'll get to you in just a second. But I want to sum this up just for tonight and just hear your comments and questions on the breaking process of the African woman. How do you feel, ladies particularly, do you feel that this breaking process has become self-generating? We have a number of women who are just choosing or just saying basically that they will not be married, that they don't feel like there's enough men out there to be married. But on the other hand, we have women who just are seemingly selecting or picking men, the uncivilized men, so to speak, and starting families with them and living with them and allowing them not to work, not to pay bills, and just basically sit home all day. And I'm not saying it's just men that are doing this, but for this conversation tonight, the breaking process of the African woman, this seems to be where it would have started from. Now, where my mixed emotions come in at here is that in my growing up years, I don't recall seeing this situation happening. Basically, I don't recall women of my day and time that I looked up to, that, you know, my grandmother and my aunts, I don't recall the male figure just kind of sitting around not working. So I don't really know where it all started. I hear a good number of people say that the 70s, seem to be where we started to go wrong as a race. I don't really know enough about it or have researched enough about it, but I just don't remember seeing that in my day and time. I remember seeing men that worked, whatever it was, they did what it took to take care of their families. But maybe it's like Ms. Erlene said, there became a time where corporate America started hiring women before they would hire the men, and which made the women go into more of a authority role, so to speak. Not that money should make the woman go there, but I think mentally, if they were already there and feeling that they had already replaced the male or stepped ahead of the male, then getting a job in corporate, per se, corporate America, or just getting the job prior to the male could create a huge issue. And does that lead into our single parent home? Does that lead into our divorce rate? You know, there's so many, the divorce rate, we've talked about divorce on the show and the divorce rate within the African American community just being out of the window, high top, you know, as far as the numbers are. It's just beyond what we can ever imagine as far as the number of divorced families. And then just the of single parents, you know, just young girls and males having kids out of wedlock. Do you feel that it all ties in to what we're talking about. Again, has his plan been self-generating, and we're in the 300th year. This 2012 marks the 300th year for his speech, basically, and he said, again, that it would become self-generating for at least the next 300 years, if not longer. Me personally, I think it seems that we have allowed the plan to become self-generating just from my take and looking at my perspective on life and how I see people living their lives and how we got here. I'm not really sure because, again, I don't remember in my day and time growing up seeing things like that. Yes, there were, of course, men and women that did not work, but for the majority, I remember seeing males working. I remember seeing, you know, the females working as well and taking care of families and just being more on one accord, I guess I would say. There was more family unity, I think, personally, than there is now. We seem to have truly separated from one another and also trying to just get before everybody in everything. We tend to want things that really don't make us who we are. You know, we talked about the purses, the $300-$400 purses. We talked about the big homes, the big cars. All these things we seem to want to fulfill something else to make us feel superior in this world. But we've totally missed the connection of family, of unity, of having two-parent homes, of raising kids that can come back with their kids and see both parents. And I'm not saying this is just in the black community, because on another level, I think it's become so self-generating until it's filtering out beyond the black community. And I've heard some white race say that as well, that a lot of the things that we used to have to go through is not just a race, it's not just a black race thing any longer, that it is filtering out. If you think about the music that our children, per se, listen to, where there's just as many other races that listen to that music as well. The sagging pants, there are just as many other races that are walking around with the sagging pants. It's even gotten into the Chinese. I remember the first time I saw a young Chinese man with his pants sagging, I thought, my God, it's just everywhere now. So it's filtering out, it's become self-generating, and it's, again, it's outside of our race now. I think it's getting all over. And it doesn't mean that we don't have work to do, particularly as women. I think we have a lot of work to do, and I'm sometimes hard on us because I think we are the connection, so to speak. I think we were put here to be helpmates to our spouses. And because of the reversal roles, or to the male figure, and because of the reversal roles, I think we've kind of stepped out of line, and it's truly affected marriages, affected families, affected our children. And I'm part of that same era. You know, I feel like I practically raised, you know, Brandon in a one-parent home for the most part. And sometimes you do just have to wake up. I know as I look back and think about some of the things, even some things I could have did differently, you know, that maybe could have saved my marriage. So there's so much that you have to go through in order to get to a place. And I think one of our callers summed up one of our shows as saying, what can you do? Has it been self-generating in your life? Think about all these things and make it applicable to your life. After hearing these things as a woman, what things in your life, if you're in a relationship, if you're seeking a relationship, if you're a woman that wants kids and things like that, think about whom you are picking. And the male figure, you should do the same. I used to tell Brandon, you know, you can go out and I know he's sick of me using him, but you can go out and get someone pregnant, and that person is going to be your child's mother for a lifetime. You could leave this world tomorrow, and I will have very limited say without totally fighting for this child. But what
She eats, your child eats. Where she stays, your child stays. What she's okay with, or whomever she's okay with, then that has to be okay with your child as well, or it's going to be a part of your child's life. So we need to start getting in a position to recognize these things, and I think one way to do that is to go back and take a look at where we come from. What things could have possibly allowed us, that we allowed to get us in the state that we're in now? Because I think if we do not, then we are really, even as a nation, not just a black race, even just human race, we're headed for disaster. Because, again, I think it's become self-generating outside of the black race. But my focus for this show, for this time of the show, is on the black race. And where are we? Where are we going? And again, women, I just challenge you to take a look at your life and ask yourself that question. Have you allowed it to become self-generating in your life? Are you still in bondage because of what happened back in that day and time? I do think in some ways it has filtered down psychologically, because we at some point did start to see. And I think for me, it was when I got a bit older, not as a child, you know, because, again, as a child growing up, I think I saw some positive male models, and I saw some positive female role models in my life. But as I started to grow older, it seemed that it started to diminish. I've had women tell me, you know, that they're okay with their man staying home playing Xbox all day or whatever is out now, and that they're okay with them not working. And I just don't understand that. I don't necessarily think I'd understand a male saying that, you know, he's okay with his wife not working if it was a need for the family. But I just personally think it's totally out of order. And in reading this and studying this topic, I can't help but wonder about this Willie Lynch speech. A lot of people think that it's not real, it's not true. And if it's not, I say he did a really good job of predicting the future because of the state we're in today with just the black race, the human race. But again, for this topic and this show, my focus is on the black race with our young girls, with our males. There's not a whole lot I can do for young males. So I always challenge our males out there that are listening, do something, give back. If you are a man or a male who understands this process and understands how easily it is to get off track as a male in this day and time, not being able to find a job, and there are some males out there who I truly believe absolutely look and, again, want to take care of their family and want to do better, but society has a way of breaking them down, and then when we as women do the same, it's easy, I feel, to give up. It's very easy for a male to give up. Not making an excuse for it, but I think it's really easy for particularly our young men to get caught up and just hopeless. And when you lose hope, you have nothing. When you lose hope for your future, when you see just about every male around you struggling, that's your race. You know, you tend to lose hope. I think one of the best things our children could have gotten out of this presidency is seeing a black man for once, seeing a black man in the White House. I mean, if nothing else happens after that, I think for our children, our women, just to see a black male win the presidency is a phenomenal thing. But what next? You know, what now? Don't allow it to be in vain. You know, tell your young son, tell your young daughter, if that's what you want, you go for it. But in going for it, you have to live that life accordingly. You have to order your steps and allow God to order your steps as well, because apparently Obama did something right. And I bought up, even as women on a previous show, I bought up the fact that once President Obama and Michelle, you know, had taken on the presidency, how I heard so many of us, so many black women, saying so many things about Michelle Obama that I thought, here we are, we have our first family, And all you can think about and say is that, well, she's not so cute, and she needs to do this, and she needs to do that. She doesn't need to do anything. She's in the White House. Her husband is president. But I was just absolutely amazed that at this time, all some women were able to say was, if she doesn't have this dress, she's not dressed right. Her hair is not this. Her hair is not that. And I think she's absolutely gorgeous. I think she's one of the most beautiful black women walking this side of the world. So, again, that just tells me, it just reiterated that we have so far to go with supporting one another. That's another thing with the breaking process of the African woman. We break each other down. We tear each other down. You know, if we have First Lady in the White House and we're talking about her hair or what she has on, wow, what will you say about me or the neighbor or your coworker? Because, again, she has to do nothing. She's there. She's in the White House. Her husband's president. But our mindset, and we talk all the time about renewing our mind, we have to. We have to. And I do believe it starts with us. We are women. We bear children. We carry kids for 9 months, life in our body for 9 months. So I do believe we are it. And I believe if we get in line with God's purpose and God's plan, everything else has to fall in place. I just truly believe that. And in studying the breaking process of the African woman, to me, for me, it just confirms it all the more. And I challenge you all to read it as well. Again, I'm not going to keep you long if you guys don't have comments or questions. My goal is to get it out to you as much as possible. What we will do next week is sum it all up. Every chapter we'll pull just certain parts out, and I do want to spend a lot of time on the African-American woman, and so we may do that part later on, but we will tie up or finish up this series on the making of a slave next week, just bringing it all to the forefront and reiterating some things that hopefully will not die. You know, we have Black History Month in February. It doesn't have to be one month out of the year. Our children should know our history. Our children should know. There were so many things that I remember. I think it was the Tom Joyner Show, and I think I brought this up just back then. I was driving in to work, and I used to hear he would just tell us things that were invented by African Americans, and I was just amazed even then as a grown woman to hear some of the things that we as blacks took part in. Our kids don't hear that. So instead of them playing Xbox or on Facebook at the age of 9 and 10 and with cell phones and texting, you know, have them go to the library and rent a book or do check a book out and have them look up something that has something inspirational, something that gives them hope. Because, again, I don't think a lot of our kids are seeing things like that, or they see enough to make them think, hey, I can do this. It is possible for me. They go to school and they're beaten down. They come home. There's usually nobody there because the woman is working. The woman is not home. In most cases, have to, because we're so out of order with things, with the big houses, the big car, the $400 purses. When do you have time to raise a child or to be nurturing to your spouse and to your children? I remember Brandon coming home one day, sixth grade, and I would take my lunch and go home so that I would be there sometimes when he gets home from school. I just thought that was important for a child to walk home, walk in the house, and there's someone there sometime, an adult. And I remember one day he said, it feels so good to come home and you be here. And at the same time, I remember, well, I'm out working because I have to. I've set it up to where I have to work now. You know, I have to. And I just hope no one else gets into that situation, because things mean nothing when it comes. And if that's what you want, then don't have kids. And at that time, you know, I was a young mom, and so I had to work as well, and spent the rest of my life working and working now. Of course, things are much better than they were then, but as a mom, it did make me feel really bad to know that, you know, my son, I have to be at work, but my son would prefer I'm home when he comes home. He just preferred there'd be someone here and he doesn't have to walk into an empty house. So if we're out working and taking care of all those things, how nurturing can we be as women? We do have a caller, and I want to bring the caller in. We have a caller from the 615 area code, last 46722.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you today?
Is Stacy?
Yeah.
How are you?
I was wanting to talk about, like, the Willie Lynch letter. As a young female, I guess growing up, I do feel like some things in this generation needs to be changed. I know when I was younger, I am light-skinned, and I used to have people approach me asking me, you know, I know you're mixed or something, but really, in reality, down the line, I'm mixed with, on my mother's side, I have a white grandpa, and, you know, this is my grandma used to be in slavery, but I think with the male, the mother, like, protecting her son, I think that does start to affect us a little in today's generation, how we allow our males to just sit back and take the easy road, and how we as a young generation need to start changing some of the aspects that are going on. Say, for instance, for me, as a young female, I'd rather take the approach of actually having a male who I know will be able, like, to support both, like, his family and his wife. And then, I guess, taking the approach even more than starting a family. I mean, today's generation, you usually start with you have the baby, and then you start looking for the marriage. And sometimes I feel like we do need to be in that divine order to make things change, and until we start taking those steps, I don't think anything's going to change in this society. It's the mindset that we have. We're so used to everything that we see in today's society. It's not like we're taking a step out of our lives and actually saying, this is what I want to do to make things better. I think when we start taking those steps, that's when society will start to change. But until then, it's not. We're going to have our males sitting on the couch, not wanting to work, you know. And then we have our females who are trying to be the provider for, like, the single-parent homes, which is something I strive not to have in my life, is to be a single mother. That's why you got to take those steps to change. I guess that's my opinion.
Well, let me ask you this. You're a young female. What do you see? Do you think that is a possibility? Do you think that it sounds like you've made a decision if that's what you want? And I'd like to hear, do you feel like you've always been in that position of thinking, you know, I want to make a choice to, you know, get the husband first, then the baby. Okay, but now, let's say, do you feel like there's choices out there? Do you feel like you're limited in the number of males that could be a responsible husband, father? And if so, do you feel that you could be the type of wife, mother, that would be okay with being the support, being supportive to that male in whatever state? Because, and I'll let you answer that, and I want to be certain that it's clear that a man doesn't have to be in corporate America to be able to take care of his family. And I think a lot of women are looking for the suit, the tie, and the car and all that. And a lot of good guys are being missed. A lot of good men are being missed who would, you know, would come home and be the one that you could send the kids to make the decision. But, Stacey, let me hear from you. Do you think that there are possibilities, choices out there for you, or do you feel very limited in your choices? And on top of that, have you always been this way? And if not, what has helped you get to a point where you want to be different, that your mind has been renewed, so to speak?
The first one, at the beginning, it wasn't, my first instinct wasn't to find a husband and then have kids. You know, it was just basically going with the flow. I think with my walk with God, I started to put, oh, I should have a husband first, and then I'll think about kids, because I feel like that's the way it should be, because you have so many females nowadays who are having kids and turn around, where's their father at, of course. So with the having a limit of males, I do feel like it's very slim, because you have the males who are, you know, they're not mature yet. They're still chasing after whatever they see is, you know, in a female term, is good, like, or a guy who's going to give it up, like, who's going to be that female. And so I do feel like there's that limit. You know, it's always, in my opinion, the good girl is, you know, the last chosen, or, you know, the guy saying, well, I'm a good guy, then why haven't I found love? Well, maybe we're all searching in the wrong places. Like, the good girls are wanting somebody who's, like, a little bit rebellious. So I do, in my opinion, I do feel like there's a limited choice for me, because you got to find out who's going to be, like, perfect for you, and who's going to want to walk with you and God. And, you know, in today's society, it's all about the media, the music, and how sex is changing everything. And it gets crazy when you start, like, when you just step back and you actually look at how everybody's living their life, and you're like, that's not the life you want to live. So, and since for male, yeah, I do feel like there is a limit. You always got to find out, well, who's into this, and, well, what is he like, and is he following God, but what path are you taking to follow God? Like, are you still sinning? It is a limit choice. It's kind of, it gets hard when you are actually searching for somebody and you know that there is a male out there, but yet he's still clubbing and chasing girls, and it gets kind of hard. You just, I guess for a female, I'm just slowly walking with God and trying to figure out, you know, God's going to place somebody in my life, so why not just be patient along the road? So.
Do you feel, I have one more question for you, and thank you for your honesty, but do you feel that you had enough positive role models as far as women in your life growing up? Do you feel like you had enough of positive role models? And if not, do you think that could have potentially made a huge difference in your thinking process?
That's very honest, Miss Tammy. I guess I'm kind of like a block, because the way I grew up, it was kind of my mom, she was there, but it wasn't like she was giving me advice on anything. It was basically, I was growing up as a, trying to be a young girl, trying to be conservative. Like, I was so conservative, I would double, like, put on an extra T-shirt on top of a T-shirt. So I kind of, as I grew up, I had my mother, but I didn't have, like, that role model that I needed. So I feel like as I got older, those women started to fall into place, and I started to have good role models where I can actually be like, okay, well, this is somebody I can actually look up to. So as I was growing up, I had my mother, but not so... not the good role model that I needed or somebody to help me, guide me to this womanhood that I am in now. So as a young woman, no, I didn't have it, but as a, I mean, as a child, I didn't have it, but as a young woman, now I do have it. So right now, I'd say it's a good feeling to have women role models, but as a child, like when I was younger, I wish I did have that role model in my life. So some of the things that I've done, I would have actually changed my decision on. So it just all depends on who the person is or who the young female is.
Okay. Well, thank you for your comments, and very enlightening, and thank you for listening. Do you have anything else you want to add or any questions?
No, I'm good. I just wanted to comment.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you again.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay. Very enlightening again. I cannot say enough. Two women, four women, because I think once we start to line up and really renew our thinking process, and it is a daily exercise. Every day I feel like I have to grow more. Every day I think, even sometimes, boy, I thought I had come so far, and then something will happen or something I'll think and or something I'm going through will just kind of, it can easily set you back. And again, I just think that comes from being in bondage mentally, spiritually, and just at some point in life, I think we all have lost hope and felt hopeless and caught up in the mistakes we've made and feeling like there's no way out. But the renewing of the mind, I would say, works all the time. And again, if Frederick Douglass can make a decision that regardless of my circumstances and many other slaves at that time, you know, they were consistent and made a true commitment that I will not end up here. You know, in my mind, I will not end up here. And as I mentioned, when I was working in the school system, that was something that not many of us, but a good number of us would tell the children, regardless of your circumstances, you can come out of this. You can move forward. And as this letter or this speech was presented, as it will become self-generating, meaning that we will have to do nothing else. We just sit back and watch our plan run its course. That's disturbing to me, particularly fast-forwarding where we are today. It's just really disturbing to me. And the way to change it is first within yourself. Ask yourself again, have I allowed it to be self-generating in my life? And if so, how? So it takes some real soul-searching, some deep soul-searching, and some honesty to yourself, because you won't or no one else will fix what they think is not wrong. And sometimes we lie to ourselves so much and for so long till we start to believe our lies and start to think, well, I can't change it. I can't do anything about it. It's always going to be this way. I'm too old now. But we all owe our family, our children, something. That should be enough to want to do better, to want to think better. And it all starts in the mind. I truly believe that it all starts with the renewing of your mind. And as Stacy has said tonight, and many others, that God plays such a huge part in that, for sure. But you also have to have that desire to do the same, to persevere through all that you're going through. And as children, I can tell you, it's hard to, as a child, to see past your circumstances. It's hard to tell a child who will go home and will not eat anymore until the next day at lunch. It's hard to tell a child or give a child hope who's come to school the entire year with shoes with the soles coming out in the winter. You know, it's happening all around us. it's hard to give that child hope. But that starts at home. That starts with parenting, because somewhere down the way, I mean, if you have to go knock on the door and say, my child needs some shoes or something, and I know that's easier said than done, but as I mentioned last week, we are, I think, putting our focus on the wrong things, in the purses, in the hair. You know, I've had parents who say, well, I can't buy my kid this, and I'm not saying one male or female, but if your child is in need of something and you can't buy it, but you just went last week and your nails are done, $40, you know, your hair is done, you know, again, where are we in that, and what does that do for us? And I think some of you may think it has nothing to do with this making of a slave, but it's like we chase things to make us feel important. We want those things to make us feel important. And what should make you feel important when you can buy those things and it does not hurt you? It does not, you know, you don't have to go lacking on your utility bill, or, you know, your child can go on this trip, so to speak. And, you know, you're paying $12 to get into wherever, and your child doesn't have lunch money next week. So where are our priorities? Have you allowed this become self-generating? And if so, how for your life, how have you allowed it to be? And then once you figure it out, always go back. Always go back and help pull somebody else up. We as women, again, I cannot say that enough either, we tend to beat one another up. We tend to, using Michelle Obama again, this lady's in the White House. Her husband is first African-American president. And for a good long time, I heard that from young, old, I was just floored by that, that here she is, and this is all we have to say. And I heard positive things as well, but I heard more negative than I did positive about her looks and her dress. And I just, again, I was just lost for words. So in closing, I'm going to check the chat line once more. The lines are open. I don't want to leave. If anyone has a comment or question, now is the time to get it in. If not, again, I challenge all of you to reread. You can easily Google this the Willie Lynch letter, The Making of a Slave. You can put it in anyway, and it will come up. I want to share next week some things that just give you some statistics. One of our listeners sent some information to me after last week's show, and after reading, I was even more, I mean, just more of lost for words in some of the things I read and got to see. And that was one, I mentioned one of them, meaning 400 black males are going to be released and will have nowhere to go. And what it said was a halfway house would be a great investment for someone. But 400 males, and you think about the number of homes that are without father figures, you think about what's going to happen to those males when they are out, when they're set free. Are they really going to be free? Most males come out and they can't find a job, not because they don't want one, not because they're not searching, but the laws, it's like what we started this show with, progression or regression. Where are we? You know, slavery, to me, my opinion, has taken on, it's gone to another level. It's not as, well, maybe I shouldn't even say that, it's not as public, but even, I think maybe I need to retract those words as well, because in some cases it is still public, but I think there's a lot of slavery taken on now behind the door. Who's making these laws? And we're not going out and fighting to change these laws. Who's making them? It's like I shared one show for this series. I've seen on two instances where Caucasian white kids are stopped by police officers and clearly drinking, clearly on some type of drug, but parents are called to take them home, never recorded. I've seen it happen. I complained one of those occasions because of, I was older and wiser at that time, but, you know, I clearly saw this officer pulling this mom to the side saying, you know, I'm not going to write this up. She was drinking, ran right into an elderly lady. The little girl was totally drunk. But I can guarantee you that not many of our kids get a break like that. They're taken in. So who's making the laws? We know that, but what are we doing about the laws? Are we standing up for our children? Even in the school system, are we standing up for our children? I mean, if you just open up your mouth and start to talk, ask a child, how are you doing? You know, how is school? Kids should not even be able to come around you. Brandon's friends, if you're sagging, you don't come in my house. If you pull up, and that was in high school, if I see you out in the streets and your pants are down, they better be coming up, and they would, but it's because they the respect that they have for you. So I don't want to get too much off of the topic, but all of this is applicable to this topic, and I just want to leave you with, what can you do to make a difference? Has it been self-generating in your life? What can you start if you're a woman? Again, start with our young girls, and the best way to do that is to lead by example. You know, don't put up with the uncivilized male. Don't bring him in your home. Don't allow him to, don't make a baby with him, basically, because the cycle starts again. It just starts all over again. So really take the time to pull this letter up, research it, read it, and be prepared to come back next week for a total discussion or a total, we're going to wrap it up, sum it all up, and just end the series, and we may do it again later, but we will just end the series next week, and we will bring it all to the forefront and really be prepared to share your thoughts and your comments, particularly the ladies. The men have been very forthcoming in this topic for the previous show, so I really want to hear from women. Stacey, thank you again. Stacey is a young woman, and I've watched her grow for the past few years, and it's just amazing how far she's come and how dedicated she is to making a difference, even with her sisters. I hear her now wanting to be an example for her young sisters in the way she dressed, the way she talks. She's just wanting to be a clear example, and I so admire that for her at this age, and I wish I had it at that age. It makes life so much better. So I commend her for that and many others. And I believe Stacey was able to do that because she started to have positive women in her life. It makes a huge difference. And the same with the young males. Men, you would be surprised how much different young males receive things from you all. We can tell them something as parents that makes no sense to them. And I have an example for you. I have to use Brandon because he's my only child. I've been trying to get this child for years to put on a watch, for years. I mean, from a child to wear a watch. I just think it's just the right thing to do. I don't know, how do you tell time and know where you got to be with no watch? And he recently, just this past week or two, was watching a program, or someone told him, or I don't remember how it worked, but all it took was for a male to say, stay away from men who don't wear watches because they're frivolous with their time. So he's telling me Malcolm X. And I'm thinking, we were out to dinner, and I looked over, and he had on a watch, and I'm like, you have on a watch? He said, oh, yeah, I've been wearing it. And I'm like, how? What? How did that happen? And just a male. He just heard someone, a male, say it. So I'm assuming that no one has ever just told him, to put on a watch as a male. But you have to have those conversations with young males. Again, ask them, you know, what's going on in your life? How are you doing? What's high school? You'll be surprised just starting the conversation what you will get out of a conversation by just taking the time, sitting down, and talking to males and females. So I challenge everyone to dig deep, start with yourself, then start some type of program. Can't say it enough, women, wherever you are, we have the Butterfly Evolution Foundation, and you can start it where you are. We can help you get going for your area. I'm thankful for the 678 Butterflies that's moving us to a different direction, but I'm thankful for Latasha who started it there in the Georgia area. Can't say enough about it. So let's not continue past the 300th year. 2012 marks the 300th year that this Lynch presentation said at least it will last 300 years. Let's stop it this year. Let's give them something else to write about. The people who still believe in this, in slavery, because believe it or not, you still have a lot of people that believe in it. But it's not much that they have to do about it anymore because self-generating. We're doing it to ourselves, or we are allowing it to be done. We're not marching. We're not fighting, even with Occupy. But the majority of the people that I saw or heard that were marching were not us. So we need to, but what we can't, because we can't come together, or we seem not to be able to come together on just the basic, simple stuff. So how can we, on a larger scale, so has it been self-generating for your life? And if so, how? I'd love to hear from people next week about that. And as you go through this week, think about it and jot it, write it down, and be ready to reflect upon it, because it will help someone. I feel like there's many of you out there that have so much to say about this, but for whatever reason you're choosing not to. But it starts with acknowledging it. So even if you don't come back next week and share it, write it down for yourself and implement a plan, just as they did. You implement a plan for your life and for your future and for your children's future. And if not your children, your nieces, your cousins, your nephews, implement. If their parents are not doing what they're supposed to do, then you jump in and you start. You make the difference. You call and ask, how are their grades? You call and say, I'm going to check on you next semester to see what your grades are. We're doing nothing, but we're expecting them to change. We got to start with our next generation and make a difference. So with that, I'm going to close. I'm just going to leave it there. So if you've not gotten your questions in by now, I don't want to have another reoccurrence like we did last week. You guys popped in at the last minute, and we're just about out of time anyway. So hold your questions, hold your thoughts. Again, write them down, and be prepared to sum this topic up next week and bring it all to a close as we close the Making of a Slave series. I want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you for all of the new people that tuned in tonight. We have quite a few people in the chat line, more than I've seen since we began. So thank you for that. Also the new callers, thank you. I cannot thank you enough. Everyone have a wonderful night, and be prepared to come back next Monday, 8 o'clock Central Standard Time, as we conclude the topic, The Making of a Slave, and this is in regards to the Willie Lynch presentation. Thank you. You all have a good night.